And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This is our leadership series. This program is presented by Blinkist. Blinkist is used by over 12 million people now, and it's a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books, and you can get access to it listening to individual books in 15 minutes or less. We'll tell you a little bit more about Blinkist at the end of this program. Hey, today's special guest is Will Platt Higgins. He is the Vice President of Global Clients, Government Policy, and Advocacy at Facebook. Will leads a team from around the world partnering with brands and agencies to use the Facebook platform to build high consumer engagement and unleash brand potential. Will led P&G's global hair care at WPP's Gray Global Group and also had served as the Executive Vice President at Saatchi & Saatchi London. His clients included Coca-Cola, General Mills, and of course, P&G. And I want to thank our mutual friend, Tim Love, for connecting us and bringing us together today. Will, welcome to our Success Made to Last show.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you back on the show. Hey, for starters, tell us about how your family and how you guys are doing during this crazy pandemic era.
Thanks for asking, Rick. I think all things considered, we're doing very well. We really haven't gone anywhere, I suppose, like the vast majority of everybody else. The initial experience, because my kids are both below 10, the initial experience of homeschooling was pretty challenging. My wife bore definitely the full brunt of that, and that was a little challenging. It took us a while to get into a routine. But, you know, thanks for asking. Everyone's doing okay. So far, we're reasonably healthy, and we're being grateful and thankful for having a little bit of space being able to get outside in the yard and ride a bicycle from time to time. And so we're grateful for the small things.
Well, maybe the kids can pick up more of that Queen's English during this special time of homeschooling.
It's funny. You know, the kids have very strong American accents, and their mother is from South America. And so when they come home, they speak Spanish. So far, Rick, my ability to influence them is very limited.
Well, good luck to you on that, Dad. Well, today we want to talk about your own career journey and link this to my beloved P&G company, where I learned some key core values, including integrity, leadership, ownership, compassion, and trust. I'd love to hear about how your career, especially tied to Procter, prepared you for the leadership position at Facebook.
It's a great question. I'm happy you started with that one, Rick. So I started working, as you say, on the agency side with Procter & Gamble in 1998, and one way or another, I've been working with them ever since. So it's been quite a while now. And I would say, you know, I don't have an MBA. It's much more common actually here in the US to have the advantage of an MBA than it is in England, where I come from originally. But in many ways, I feel like I kind of got an MBA through my experience and my partnership with P&G over that period and my continued partnership with them. And I think there are a number of things that are unique to as you say, to the culture and how P&G operates that I've learned from. Masses actually that I've learned from. In addition to, frankly, just forging some, you know, lasting friendships with people who at the time were clients and whom I now consider friends. I would say, Rick, if I were to sort of break it into three chunks of things that I learned from P&G, the first would be and I really would use the word is deliberate, relentless, a relentless focus on the consumer. I think this was probably best embodied by A.G. Lafley's "The Consumer Is Boss," but the grounding in every meeting, in every brand I'd worked on, in every country that I was in, the grounding that everything begins and ends with creating consumer value and thinking about things through the consumer lens. It sounds so simple, but it's so easy, I think, to get confused and to get distracted on that. But I think Procter continues to do an excellent job with a relentless focus on the consumer. And on the agency side, you know, you breathe that in and you learn that. And I think that enables you to build better, more insightful ideas and work. The second is what I would call kind of just out and out excellence in rigor and discipline and execution. Working with Procter & Gamble taught me strategic thinking, being able to strategically evaluate things, critique things. Are they actually on equity? Are they building the brand? Are they supporting the brand's point of difference? Getting educated on doing work that features celebrities and understanding that, you know, as P&G teach you, you know, we want to feature the celebrity, but we want to feature the celebrity in service of the brand. We're not trying to advertise the celebrity's brand. We're trying to advertise our brand and use the celebrity's credibility to endorse that. Clarity of writing, learning how to, you know, the classic, as you know, Rick, the classic one-page memos, clarity of writing, getting to the point, main point communication, all that stuff. I learned, frankly, from my P&G clients and their expectations, and I'm massively grateful for that. And the last, which maybe gets to your point on the PVPs, you know, the values and principles and purpose of the company, is actually how Procter & Gamble treat their partners. So, you know, I was always on the agency side, and right now I work for Facebook, and I would consider myself also, you know, a partner to P&G. But never have I ever felt like I was a supplier or a vendor, Rick. And, you know, in many ways it's semantic terms, but it matters a lot that the way that Procter & Gamble treated us on the agency side, and it didn't matter actually, all kinds of brands I worked on, it was always the same. They treated us like a valued partner. They respected us. Mm-hmm. They wanted our opinion. They wanted us to push back. They wanted us in as many meetings as possible. And it felt great. It felt great. And I think the smart thing about that is it's a motivational way to get the best out of people. To treat people like that. When you treat people like at arm's length and you label them a supplier and a vendor, I think they're more inclined to behave that way. So I just thought that the way Procter showed up there was excellent, and I've kind of learned that as well myself.
Yeah, I love what you just said, and that brings back so many good memories, and it sort of dovetails into being a dad. And I'm wondering, as crazy as it sounds, I'll share with you that my two daughters that are now well into their 30s know how to write a one-page memo. They both know how to speak in the five-step persuasive format of Procter & Gamble. And I'm just wondering, in the case of your kids, do you think that you can raise your children to be strategic thinkers? And if so, how would you even broach that?
I hope so. I hope so, Rick. I mean, there's a danger, I think, I suppose, of, oh, Dad, you know, you're such a marketing geek and so on. My eldest, who's nine, I definitely would be pushing me there. But I hope so. I really hope so. It's funny, we were just having a conversation yesterday about holding companies and introducing the idea of a holding company. And obviously, you know, they're little kids. They don't understand what a holding company is. But I was suggesting to them that all of these brands that they knew, we were actually using the brands that lived under the Mars companies moniker. You know, brands that, of course, are very – very engaging for them, Snickers and Starburst and Skittles. And then I was saying, well, they also make pet food, and they were starting to understand these things. And, you know, I do want them interested in all this stuff, Rick, and I do want them to be clear writers and to get to the point. It's such an asset to be able to clearly communicate things and to simplify things. So, yes, maybe I need to come to you later for tips on how you did that.
Well, you are welcome to call me anytime. You know, it's a joy to pass on solid core values to the next generation. And it sounds like that you are getting a chance to carry forth your best version principles on a daily basis at Facebook.
I think so. I think so. And I'm proud to do so. I really am proud to do so. And I'm very quick to credit P&G and some of the other clients I've had the pleasure of working with for the learning. Honestly, I mean it. I feel like they've given me an MBA, sitting on the other side of the table from their, you know, endless focus group facilities, Rick, where we were evaluating storyboards and trying to unlock the great insights and hours of conversation. You know, that kind of osmosis is super valuable, and I'm very, very grateful for it.
I know that they are. Now, let's turn to COVID-19 and how that's changed the profile of doing business. I know that Facebook does business with over 90 million small companies. How is Facebook aiding in the recovery of small businesses today?
Yeah, I think so there's a few things here which are interesting. Initially, Rick, at the start of the pandemic, it's kind of an interesting analog in a way to P&G here. You know, P&G saw a tremendous spike in demand for certain products. The much talked about quest for toilet paper that everybody had, and paper towels, and so on and so forth. And they saw a huge spike there, and they suffered from out of stocks. And in a similar way, what we experienced was a commensurate, very large demand for our services that we might ordinarily see perhaps on, you know, New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, where people are, you know, inclined to lean toward their friends and family and wish them well and so on. And we were seeing this kind of volume, Rick, exponentially, almost on a daily basis in various countries. So that was manifesting in things like huge increases in the number of messages being sent, and huge increase in the time that people were spending doing video chat calls on WhatsApp and Messenger and so on, and the number of groups being set up and people being engaged in groups because people were at home and they were spending a lot of, you know, trying to connect with people the only way that they could, which was through their digital devices. So, you know, initially we saw that going on, and we continue to see some of these spikes, some of them ebb and flow, some of the you know, patterns of behavior have retained, and some have subsided a little bit. In terms of the business aspect, I think this pandemic has accelerated trends that we already, all of us knew were ongoing. So, you know, secular trends such as the shift to mobile and the shift to all of us transacting and doing business and so on online accelerated dramatically because, you know, Will can no longer get to the store. So he's doing it that way. And I think for businesses who had strong DTC capabilities and that were already set up to succeed there, they were able to take advantage of that. And for businesses that were not, there was obviously a tremendous pressure, self-imposed pressure to adapt quickly. And so what we've been trying to do is work with the small businesses and the large businesses, actually, to adapt to this changing consumer behavior and provide them with tools and products that help them. So, you know, from a small business point of view, that could be, you know, innovations that we've built around, you know, more shoppable advertising, things that better allow them to indicate they're out of stocks, things that better allow them to indicate whether or not they can offer sort of curbside pickup and so on. So we've been trying to help the small businesses there where we can. We've also, you know, we've put money aside for the small business effort in a large SMB grant. I believe it was $100 million. That we donated to support the SMBs, and we continue to try and innovate on a product point of view, Rick. On the larger client side, it's the same flavor of trying to help our businesses adapt to being where the consumers are and help them, you know, service them. Some of our clients have seen huge spikes in their online transactions that they weren't expecting, or that perhaps they typically only see in the holiday season, and so. Versus seeing that as a seasonal thing, right now that tends to be an ongoing thing. So how do we help them there? How do they manage to their supply chains, their logistics, and so on? So yeah, it's a massive upheaval from a business point of view, and people are trying to, as ever, move to where the consumer is and where the behavior is and adapt accordingly. And that's what we're trying to do. I think the final thing I would say is that the advice that we tend to give the businesses is to be of as much utility to people as possible, and that where you can make sure that you're going back to our point earlier on insights and understanding the customer and the consumer being boss, where you can understand what people want, you're in a much better position to provide it. So, you know, initially we were seeing, and we still see this, you know, tremendous interest in education. People wanting education on and factual, verified education on the pandemic. What are the symptoms and so on, and making sure that you know we can be part of provisioning that the right information. People want to both support fundraisers, kick off and initiate fundraisers. How can brands help facilitate that? They want advice again to our point earlier. They want advice on homeschooling. You know, what can we learn from this? What other teachers and so on. They want advice on cooking and food, particularly in the earlier days when it was difficult to get to the supermarket and there were long lines. How can you be creative with a finite number of ingredients? How can you be creative in terms of exercising and your mental health and meditation and so on and so forth? All those things, we've sort of been working with clients to keep them focused on the jobs to be done framework, Rick, that people have, and trying to help them provision those to the best of their ability.
I think that Facebook is one of the singular best connections for small businesses to ride with their consumers at scale. And for those small business leaders that are listening today, how can they get in touch with you to learn more about the Facebook services and kickstart their enterprise?
Yeah, so we have a small business team that offers scale support for small businesses. And most of that, Rick, is done and operated through the website and through the customer service channels like that. So, you know, you can find a huge amount of information in the Facebook for Business online channels and portals there with the answers to most questions about how to get started, how to get into the basics of measurement, the basics of creativity. There are forums within there as well and abilities to ask questions. And then as you start to, you know, test and run campaigns and so on, there's an ability to, you know, periodically get some of your insight work critiqued and get advice and counsel on that. So there's for the smaller advertisers, Rick, you know, who are not Procter & Gamble, which is obviously the vast majority of advertisers, that's how we support and help enable their success.
Well, that's great. Hey, Will, I want you to go in the trenches with us for a minute in our podcast industry. And similar to a company that's doing about 10 million a year, striving to do 20 million, we often hit thresholds of audiences in podcasting, and while we hang around 50,000 people per show, our specific goal is to get to well over 100,000 people listening to each episode. How does a small company or even a podcast organization scale using Facebook?
Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, that is a... That's a good question. It's a tough question. I think the first thing we would agree, Rick, I think you and I with our common P&G DNA is you have to have the right product. So the best advertising and the best admin and the best media strategy and the most unlimited budget is only effective if you have a great product. So on the assumption that everything that we're doing right now with the Built for Last podcasts is exactly where it needs to be, the question then becomes, okay, let's make sure that we're clear on our objective. So what exactly is the objective? Are we looking to increase overall, in this instance, Rick, are we looking to increase overall listener count? Are we looking to actually reduce, and I don't know the ins and outs of your business, so you'll have to coach me on this, but are we looking to reduce churn? Do we have a leaky bucket of listeners here, people who come in, much like the newspaper industry, where, you know, in an ideal world, I want someone to buy my newspaper 5 days a week, ideally six if I publish six, but maybe we'll advertise it 1 day a week. So do we have churn? Do we have a leaky bucket here? What insights do we have about the most successful podcasts? Are there content thematics here where perhaps, you know, we could do a better job of only having content from certain areas because we know that meets the job to be done and the desired consumer experience for our listeners. So I think there's a job to be done there in terms of defining the objective. Or is it actually just we want, I suppose a better crystallization of that, Rick, is do we care about high numbers or do we care about a smaller number of quality engaged numbers? right? Because you might double mm-hmm. your listening. You might find that they're not your loyal newspaper buyers, so to speak. And does that matter? Or would you prefer to have a smaller base who are much more consistently loyal to you? So I think these are things to think through at a kind of objective base level. And then I think it comes down to, I think a super important part of understanding how to best extract the most out of your investment on Facebook, which is your attitude to learning. And this is what we see the habits of clients who do very, very well is they are constantly, Rick, in a learning mindset. They're constantly looking to iterate. So when you and I were growing up, you know, and I was making a lot of TV commercials, we would spend a lot of time getting to creating and then polishing a TV commercial. And we would then send that out to air. And we would then hope to high heaven that that was going to work and deliver for us. But we almost never looked to iterate creatively on that finished piece of film. Once it was shipped and it left the harbor, we weren't really recalibrating it. And I think it's different with digital. So you're seeing a much more iterative, ongoing flywheel approach to creative development. And so what you would then do, what our most successful advertisers do, is that they build, again, on equity, benefit-driven ideally, you know, clear, singular messaging, but they build lots of different creative versions and variants of that, Rick, and they upload that into the system, and they let the targeting system or your own targeting system deliver the different creative to the different audiences, and they see which one works best. And they're sort of non-religious about it. It's a simple matter of which ones are most effective, and we pour gasoline on the ones that are, and we retire the ones that are not, but we don't stop there. We say, okay, this one's working better. How do we make it work even better still? So it's an ongoing sort of tooling process, if you will, where you get the signal of a conversion. In your case, it might be, you know, subscribing to the podcast or you know, downloading a piece of content or whatever. You get that signal and you say, hey, something's working here. How do I do more of that? So I think it's what we call the sort of the brilliant basics of approach. But the really the key to mastering this is the mindset, which is rather than sort of be confounded by it, which sometimes I think we can be confounded and people can be, sorry, we can be confounding and people can be confounded like, wow, this is really complicated. It's almost like saying, hey, you know, I've got this Swiss Army knife. It looks complicated, but I'm going to understand how I can use all the different devices that come with it, because if I do, I can be a super effective marketer. So that would be my, you know, it's not a perfect answer because we haven't gone deep into the business objectives and so on, but I think that would be the principle, is get really clear on the objective, and maybe try different things, by the way. Maybe test different objectives, mm-hmm. see which ones are more effective. Work on the insight that will unlock that for the consumer base, and then iterate creatively against that, and then look for the signal as to what's most effective, and then do more and continue to iterate.
Well, that's brilliant. That is perfect advice to the listeners who hear this show and want to learn some very tactical ways to improve their business. And especially to our friends at BNI, Business Network International, who are cutting edge entrepreneurs who are continually trying to grow and test and network within their organization. There's about 270,000 members of you out there, I know you listen to us, that can really thrive off of the Facebook process. And Will, we appreciate it. We think your advice hit the nail on the head.
Well, Rick, there's an executive that we work with who sometimes gets asked the question, you know, what is the ROI of Facebook? And what he says is, well, what's the ROI of a basketball? It's okay. Well, what do you mean here? Well, the ROI of a basketball is directly related to your ability to learn how to play basketball. And the more you practice, and I guess the more, and I don't play basketball, so I'm going to get my terms wrong possibly, but the more you practice and the more you shoot and the more that you invest in it, the better you're going to get. And so the ROI of that basketball is directly in line in the hands of the person that's holding it. And I always thought that was a sort of good philosophical North Star, because essentially what we know is that clients, for example, when you see a new ad product come on, like Stories, The clients that do very well are the clients who immediately see that and, quote, start practicing, versus look at it and say, oh, that looks unfamiliar. I'm not sure I like it. I'm not sure I'm ready for it. And that's just, again, it's a mindset thing, Rick.
Will, let's close the show with a compliment and a final comment. Your portfolio of products and services at Facebook is second to none. You've got a great company culture. And by the way, we love your podcast, 3.5 Degrees. These are all emblematic of practicing excellence on a daily basis. Add to that, I think that in these last two interviews with you, you strike me as having this fantastic superlative storytelling skill. So how can small businesses out there that listen to this show help tell their story on Facebook?
Yeah, I think I'm quite passionate about that, actually. I think because we're super proud to be the partners of so many small businesses all over the world. And I personally, not Facebook, I believe that is the kind of the industry and the locomotive of growth in so many countries. And I think the stories, the way you tell the stories are you are authentic. You tell your creation story of what it was that brought you to set up the business to begin with. You know, what problem were you solving? What was the insight that you grappled? What happened to you that led you to start this business up? To share the stories of you and your family or whoever it is that works in your business, to be passionate about the product or the service that you're operating, and to tell those stories, and people relate to those stories, Rick. And again, go right back to our conversation at the beginning about P&G and purpose-driven brands. You know, people are looking for brands to a brand to buy and a brand to buy into. And the personal stories that I think small business owners have to tell are incredibly powerful when it comes to both brands to buy and brands to buy into. And so I would encourage them to use the Facebook channels and the YouTube channels and any channel to tell that story, because people relate to it. They want it. They connect with that authenticity. And that, I think, is the secret sauce.
Well, that's fantastic. Will, we are so thankful for your wisdom, and we appreciate you coming back to be on our show. And we welcome you back next year to keep us updated on Facebook.
Rick, thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. And please enjoy the rest of the day.
That was Will Platt Higgins. We appreciate him being on our Success Made to Last show. This program is brought to you by Blinkist. Blinkist is one of our favorite apps that we have on our phone. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone or tablet or web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from over 3,000 nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. I like Blinkist basically because I don't have a lot of time, but I do want to stay up to date, especially on some great new nonfiction books coming out, and some old ones as well. Some of the recent ones that I've read have been My Beloved World by Sonia Sotomayor and Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chernow. But one of my big favorites has been Super Thinking by Gabe Weinberg. Hey, if you want to take advantage of Blinkist deal through Success Made to Last, right now we're offering a limited time special offer just for our listening audience. You can go to Blinkist.com/success, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, BLINKIST.com/success to start your free 7-day trial today. Hey, thanks for joining us. As we always say here on our show, may you continue to live the best version. Have a great week.